Tonight's recap of The Walking Dead is sponsored by our friends over at True Car, who have some useful car tips you might not be aware of. A coffee filter, you can put a little bit of olive oil on it and clean the interior of your car. That'll look nice. Removing excess weight from your car can also improve your gas mileage. And you can also place your keychain remote right underneath your chin to increase its range. All weird tips. But here's another tip that you might not know about. True Car can help you on a used car too. What? Yes, that's right. True Car isn't just for buying a new car. With the certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience whether you buy new or used. And with True Car, you can see what other people paid on the car so you know if you're getting a good deal before you buy. So you're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience when you connect with a True Car certified dealer. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. The Walking Dead Season 8 Episode 15 Worth is over, but we're just getting started here on The Walking Dead, a post-show recap. And now here are the two people that are going to debate Pizza Friday versus Spaghetti Wednesday and more. I am Rob's sister, who's Jessica Lise. Jessica, how are you?
I don't know, Rob. This feels like a lot of carbs. I think we gotta pick one and stick to it. And I'm going to say right now that sardine mac and cheese sundae, right out.
That's right out. That's right. I mean, Pizza Friday makes sense. Friday is like a party day of the week. You know, hey, let's get some pizza here. But Spaghetti Wednesday never made sense to me. Wednesday is the hump day. Do you really want like a big meal of spaghetti on Wednesday? I mean, you just got halfway through the week.
No, I think what you want is like a light. You want something lighter. You want like some steamed vegetables and chicken to like energize you to get you through the rest of the week.
Sunday is when you are like typically you want to eat it like earlier in the night. Well before you watch Fear the Walking Dead or The Walking Dead for that matter. So you have enough time to digest it.
Right. Well, Sunday is like pot roast Sunday.
Okay. Oh, that's nice. Okay. All right. So, Jess, a lot to talk about. I really did like tonight's episode. I have been not shy about talking about how I've really enjoyed all of the drama going on with the Saviors. That really comes to a head in a big way as we lose Stephen Ogg, a.k.a. Simon, tonight. And I was very surprised to see it go to a trial by combat, but it was a very fun fight scene.
Yeah, I don't know why it happened. I thought the trial by combat might have been some of the weaker stuff, but I feel like Negan showed up this episode, where there have been a lot of episodes in the past where we were honestly flabbergasted by all of the stuff that was going past him that he was seemingly not getting. And this episode, he's like, no, I got all of that. And all of those things that you thought you were getting away with, you did not get away with any of them.
Yes. So I guess we can get into tonight. How much was Negan playing 4D chess the whole season in terms of what he knew or did not know along the way? Of course, Walking Dead feedback show coming up later on this week. So get your questions in for that show when I touch base with Josh Wigler at postshowrecaps.com/voicemail or TWD. At postshowrecaps.com. I guess that the big thing I would second guess on the part of Simon is I think that the meeting of the anti-Negan co-conspirators, I think that he picked a bad place to have the secret "it's time to kill Negan" meeting.
Yeah, that seemed like you kind of don't want to do that in your own quarters.
Yeah, and sort of like out in the middle of the courtyard where it seems like that's sort of like a place where Negan tends to hang out. You would think Negan might peer out a window and say, "Ho, what are all of my top guys meeting about? I don't have anything on my calendar today."
Yeah, that's not in my outlook.
I didn't even get a meeting request for about this, Simon.
Yeah, like they practically reserved his conference room.
Right. Right. I mean, and also on the part of Dwight, it seems interesting that he wants to betray Negan. He wants to take Negan down, but I guess that he also wants all of the saviors to go. Like he it wasn't enough to be a co-conspirator in the Simon plan. He wanted the, I guess he felt like he wanted to save everybody at the Hilltop. And so that was his plan.
Yeah. Although I thought another thing we really have to talk about this episode is how all of a sudden everybody's kill switch is now a kill dial, and it's turned up to 11.
Yes. Why? Who in particular?
Well, Negan in particular has always been trumpeting this. People are a resource. People are a resource. We got to just keep people in line. And he has been pushed to this point. In fact, the central Negan-Simon conflict was, don't kill all those people. They're a resource. And then at the end of this episode, Negan gets into this, like, these people are not a resource anymore. Mm-hmm. I want to salt the earth and burn it all down.
Yeah.
And all of these people are going to die. That's very un-Negan, or at least like un-Negan up to this point. He's just kind of hit this breaking point where he's decided the situation cannot be saviored.
Yeah. Well, I think that what happened was Negan's kill switch was off, I think, for a while. And then there was the conflict with Simon that brought it back on, or sort of like that they needed Negan to be like a foil to Simon, that he was coming off as more of the pacifist. But I really feel like through the better part of the back half of season 8, I think that Negan was a pretty sympathetic figure. And then tonight he sort of returned full Negan.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. My husband and I were watching the scene with the trial by combat, and he looks at me and he says, I'm rooting really hard for Negan. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, you're kind of supposed to in this moment. You're supposed to realize there are people that are arguably even worse than Negan. But by the end of that episode, Simon is dead, sure, but Negan is kind of in Simon's headspace.
Right. Now, Jess, how about the reveal when Dwight goes back to his room and there is the woman on the chair, obviously the woman that Negan picked up at the end of last week's episode. But as Dwight opened the door and that woman is sitting there, did you have any idea who that was?
I did, but only because we batted around ideas of who it might be that Negan picked up in the car.
Yeah.
And so that woman was front of mind to me because who else was he going to pick up? And we also kind of – there was a point – this felt like slightly sloppy storytelling to me because we were, you know, the last 10 minutes of the episode when this reveal happened. And for a while in the episode, we were thinking like, oh, did we miss a scene here? Like, is there something like, did I not turn it on at the very beginning of the episode? So did I miss the part where it said who was in the car with Negan?
No.
I felt like that should have been maybe the first thing we saw. And then it was like, well, wait, maybe they're just not going to remark on it. Maybe it's Gregory and he just picked up Gregory and that was the thing that happened and we're just going to keep going. But no, he did pick somebody up and it was that lady and she was able to articulate everything that has happened with Dwight. And so here we are.
Yes. Now, did they show her in the previously on The Walking Dead? Because we are people that podcast about the show. And what I'm not saying like we're in the greatest podcasters of The Walking Dead, probably not even close. But that being said, that we watch the show and then we come on and we talk about it for an hour and we have no idea who this person is. Like, we know she's like a woman and she was working with Negan at one point. That's what we've sort of like taken from the gist of it. That does anybody who's watching the show that is not a podcaster or know who this person is?
Yvette Nicole Brown might.
She might, but she has a notebook.
Yeah, I'm given to understand she keeps a notebook about this stuff. And, you know, maybe we'd be better podcasters if we kept notebooks. I'm just saying.
Yes. And then could have maybe just a specific Walking Dead notebook.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah. So she's back. And then it was Dwight knew instantly what had gone on. And then we find out that it was like a double cross. And Negan had given a fake plan to Dwight, which was then run back to the Hilltop by Gregory. I thought it was really unbelievable that Gregory survived this episode, because I'm not sure why Simon didn't kill him. That it sounded like he has this really fun scene with Simon, and Simon is like, no, I'm going to kill you. And then he says, do you like coffee? And did Simon like hire Gregory to be like his personal assistant?
I think he gave him an unpaid internship is more like it.
So he was the person that was in charge of sending out all of the Outlook meeting invitations for the secret planning meeting. Maybe was Gregory the person that picked the courtyard?
Yeah. Gregory put the request in for the conference room, and the conference room was booked, so they ended up in the courtyard. And
yeah. How is Gregory not one of the people that took a bullet when Negan's reinforcements came out?
Yeah, Gregory should have been killed about 8 times this episode. And I don't understand, like, every time this guy shows up anywhere, like Hilltop Sanctuary, I don't care. He could show up at Oceanside, and everybody's first thought when they see this guy should be, let's just kill him. But curiously enough, nobody's kill switch is on when Gregory is around for some reason.
Yeah, I did love that conversation with him and Simon. We're talking about who has the juice.
Yeah, that was the juice is loose.
Yeah, what juice does Gregory have?
Nothing that's worth the squeeze, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it was so bizarre how Simon just was like a homicidal maniac that never killed Gregory.
Yeah, I mean, what good is Simon if he's going to go around killing everybody? Why does everybody not include Gregory?
Yeah. Jess, this episode was bookended by notes from Carl, and we got the very emotional letter from Carl. Like, Carl must have written this one page note in like a 4-point font with his third grade education, because this was a very long note for one piece of paper.
Yeah, it did seem like quite a lot, and maybe, I don't know, maybe there's some little shorthand, like maybe he used a lot of abbreviations because he knew Rick would know what he was talking about. Or maybe he's got like two sides of a piece of paper folded into another piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you think that like Carl is like a stenographer and he can write in like shorthand that Rick understands?
Well, what else was he doing this whole time? You know, he didn't learn all the stuff you would learn from like 5th grade to 11th grade. So he's probably learning about boat hooks and pot hooks.
Was it an all emoji letter?
That could be. That makes a little more sense. So Rick's reading like, you know, happy face, exploding head, double syringe, eggplant. Whoa, Carl.
Now, that was from the pizza toppings, Jess, on Friday Night Pizza.
Oh, it was eggplant pizza. Right. Okay.
So did anything in the letter from Carl to Rick surprise you?
I was surprised at how much nostalgia was in it. Mm-hmm. I thought that there was going to be some sort of directive there, similar to what we got in the letter to Negan. I thought it was going to be more like, Dad, you got to stop this. You got to make it work. Here are my instructions. And instead it's like, hey, remember pizza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember when things were normal and used to hold my hand, and it can be that way again.
Sure. And he doesn't really say here's how, or stop being a jerk or any of that. And I'm kind of surprised that Carl, in his all-knowing wisdom, put so much of the onus on Negan to not be the jerk.
Mm-hmm. And we see then Michonne, she ends up looking over at the drawer and sees the letter, and she's going to take it upon herself that she needs to deliver the letter to Negan, or at least the telegram version of the letter from Carl to Negan.
Stop killing people. Stop.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that it probably went as good as she should have expected it to have gone.
Yeah. I mean, Negan really didn't need to listen to any of that. And also, where are they getting all these batteries for the walkie-talkies? They just leave them on all the time? Or is there like, is this one of those situations that Rick never did with Morgan, even though he said he did, where he's going to like turn the walkie-talkie on at a certain time every day?
Maybe. But I mean, Negan didn't seem super interested in hearing about the letter when Rick first told him it existed. It wasn't like haunting Negan, like, so tell me, what did the kid say in the letter? I'm dying to know.
Yeah, I'm surprised he was receptive to it at all at any point, to be honest. Like, Michonne gets him on the line. He should have been like, I'm hanging up now. I don't have to deal with this. Walkie-talkie batteries are at a premium.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, it would have been funny if he really would have critiqued the, that was the worst letter I've ever heard in my life.
This kid can't write. What, he only got a third grade education?
Boy, that would be very villainous from Negan.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you really want Negan to do the full heel turn this episode.
Rick, did you even teach your kid to read? Yeah, so he hoped that Rick offered Negan peace, hopes that he takes it. Everything can change. It did for me. So, yeah, Negan was not receptive to it.
Yeah, I'm honestly a little bit not surprised by that. Mm-hmm. It would have taken some very powerful peacemaking skills to really get either one of them to come around on this. And I think the one that really had a better chance of having his heart opened is the one who fathered the child. And if all Rick's getting is, hey, hold Judith's hand and go for a walk with her, and Negan's the one that gets like the really powerful plea. Yeah, I don't think Force Ghost of Carl should be surprised that this didn't turn out the way he wanted.
Yeah. But Jess, let me ask you, from was it but 2 weeks ago on this show, Negan proposed not only a peace treaty to Rick, but a peace treaty which was going to be only a 25% tax on anything that the Hilltop was manufacturing. And Rick was then going to have to be sort of the Gregory coffee boy for Negan. Seems like that there's a high demand for these errand boys at the sanctuary. What changed since then? What changed from how about 75-25 to no, we have to kill every single person?
Well, I mean, that offer got rejected pretty hard.
Final offer, Rick. Was it because Rick lit Lucille on fire? Was that it?
Yeah, I think that might have stuck in Negan's craw a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think also the whole point of this war against the Saviors is you got to stop exploiting innocent people just to make your life a little bit easier. And Negan's like, well, what if I make the exploitation a little bit less bad? Like, that's not a deal. That's not a deal anybody wants.
No, that's a great deal. They should have taken that, Jess. That, I mean, that Rick should have run that. That's why Rick's not the leader. That's why Maggie is the greatest leader of all time, because he should have run that past Maggie. She was like, oh, Rick, that's a good deal. For just 25% of our stuff, they're going to protect us.
No, Maggie would have been like, she would have wanted to kill them all twice with that deal.
25% tax is not bad.
It's pretty bad. Like, who decides, like, who makes you the guys that collect the tax, you know?
Mm-hmm. I guess, but they're providing defense also.
Yeah, my counteroffer is nobody pays tax to anybody and nobody kills everybody.
Yeah, but what happens the next time the wolves come?
Yeah, we kill all the wolves.
Who does? Maggie?
Everybody.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that, look, for the loss of life that was coming, I think that they should have taken that deal.
Yeah. I think maybe I'm with Carl on this. Like, how about everybody just stops being a jerk and doesn't kill everybody?
Yeah. Well, that's easier said than done,
I guess. It's kind of a bell that can't be unrung at this point.
Yes, but just now here we are with just but 1 hour left to go in the Walking Dead season. Do you think that in 60 minutes of Walking Dead time from now that Negan is going to do a 180?
I don't think so. I think there's got to be, I think we've backed ourselves into a corner where there has to be a winner and a loser.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't make a satisfying series to continue. Like, if we come back next season And season 9 opens with like Rick's group paying taxes to Negan. So you have to assume that Rick's going to win this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you think is like, where will we get to by the end of next week's episode?
I think we get to a resolution on some level. I think we maybe we get a death of Negan. Like, that would be interesting.
No way Negan dies next week. You think so?
He could. I think he has to be resolved somehow, and I just don't see it happening. Like, he's in such a tizzy right now. I really do not see him getting to a point where he's like, okay, yeah, no more taxes. Mm-hmm. Democracy reigns. Everybody's reformed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting Lucille up on the mantelpiece. I don't see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, Carl had a vision for him in Carltopia.
Yeah. Yeah. He was going to work in the garden and everything.
Yeah. So let's just talk this through in terms of Negan is playing 4D chess throughout this entire episode, because I do think that kind of is what we're supposed to take away from everything. So Negan picks up the woman who sort of spills the tea about Dwight. I would think that then he probably knows by proxy that Simon is a co-conspirator. So he's just letting them live throughout the episode so that he can catch them red-handed.
I think that's what's going on. And since all of this is very self-contained, it doesn't have any effect on anything that's happening outside of the walls. And I think you have to assume that Negan didn't suspect anything up until this episode, which I find particularly galling, because both Simon and Dwight were not exactly high-level masterminds about any of the things they were pulling off. But yeah, we're all in the sanctuary. We're all regrouping. It's not affecting anything that's happening in the war. Why not let them kind of trip each other up here?
Yeah. And so then Negan takes Simon to the trial by combat and basically gives Simon sort of a fighting chance to get out of this. You know, I mean, that hypothetically he could kill Negan. Was this all just to make a show that Negan knew he could beat Simon's ass?
He's a lot bigger than Simon.
Yeah. Simon seems mean, though.
Yeah. I mean, Simon fights dirty.
Even the Simon Walker seemed mean.
The Simon Walker was great. The Simon Walker reminded me of, like, you know, some walkers are like St. Bernards and they just kind of lope along with their tongues hanging out and like drool going everywhere. And this was like the Chihuahua of walkers.
Yeah. I feel like he was like in like Super Mario Brothers, where there's like sort of a cannonball like that's on a chain that's like chomping.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
That's what that thing was like. That's the Simon Walker. All right, Jess, let's talk about Eugene a little bit tonight, because we got to see Eugene really trying to crack the whip at the bullet making factory. Now, can Father Gabriel see yet? We didn't get any sort of like Father Gabriel sphincter view POV tonight.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with Father Gabriel, and I really...
His airborne virus.
Yeah, and I appreciated Eugene calling out everybody that was saying, oh, it's got to be because he's improperly handling the guts. And no, I don't think it is, because you know what you catch if you improperly handle the guts, and that's not what Father Gabriel has. So it really bothers me, like, as somebody that tries to keep it straight in my head what exactly the canon says about this stuff. And so to have everybody saying, oh, yeah, it's because he didn't touch the guts correctly. Like, no, if you didn't touch the guts correctly, you would be a walker. Mm-hmm. So that's not what this is. And I think Eugene agrees with me on this point. It's some other horrible pathogen that he got. Could be from handling cadavers, but probably not specific to handling zombies.
Right. Now, if Father Gabriel really did want to be a fly in the ointment here, you know, he has this airborne disease that he has to wear this surgical mask or else everybody could get sick. Instead of messing with the bullets, like, wouldn't it be easier for Father Gabriel to sort of like just be like licking and coughing on all of the bullets there so that all the bullet makers get sick and can't complete the job before they have to go take on the hilltop?
Well, when Eugene was right up in Father Gabriel's face, Father Gabriel should have pulled down his mask and sneezed on him.
Yes, or vomited on him. That would have been fighting fire with fire.
Yeah, talk about just desserts.
Yeah, but ultimately, you know, we see that Eugene is really cracking the whip. So what did Eugene make here? This was a sardine mac and cheese?
Yeah, but apparently the sardines are sautéed in garlic, and you use a lot of garlic. Which, honestly, that made it sound a little bit better to me, but I'm not a sardine person. This all felt like it was going to be very, very salty, causes you to retain water. In a universe where pure water is probably at a premium.
Especially if you're Aaron.
Yeah, no kidding. This seems wasteful. I don't even know if Aaron would have touched this stuff. He's kind of a picky eater, as you recall.
Yeah, but I have to say, and I've said this before on the podcast, that Eugene is just like I see his mouth moving. I have no idea what he's even talking about. He's just going on and on and on about like, well, you see, we here we have the anchovies, the pasta, the carbohydrates, you know, like what? And I know it's not like I don't even need to pay attention to what he's saying.
Well, I would argue that you do not need to pay attention to anything that happened with this entire plot line for this entire episode, because nothing of consequence actually got accomplished.
Yeah.
It was really like he's at the same place at the end of this episode that he was in the beginning, and so is everybody else that's in his orbit.
Yeah, that's very fair. Because then we end up seeing where Eugene comes out, the guy in front of him gets an arrow through the forehead, and then we see Eugene taken captive as we see Rosita and Daryl take him. Now, where were they taking him by foot?
I don't even know. Like this plan was stupid. I thought they were going to kill him. Why didn't they kill him?
No, they wanted to keep him alive so that they could just like keep him in a hole and then bring him out to tell them useful information.
So they're going to like Jesse Pinkman in the last season of Breaking Bad.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. You ready to cook? Oh, I'm not ready to cook. I'm going to like, what?
I bet he doesn't get any ice cream either.
The number one flavor of ice cream has to be a sardine ice cream. So for Eugene, though, like what, like, so is he like in like sort of like the back lot of the sanctuary compound where it was that Daryl and Rosita couldn't drive there? So they had to like sort of like hop the fence and then bring him back there and then like take him by foot.
This seems ridiculous. Like, I would imagine that the munitions factory has a frickin' parking lot.
Yeah. Well, I guess it would have been too obvious. They would have drove onto the lot.
Yeah, just pull up to the front door. It's like a bank robbery. Get in and out in 2 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, Eugene is trying to make some inroads. You know, hindsight being 2020, I think Rosita and Daryl could have been a little nicer to Eugene. I think that, like, had they been like, no, we love you, Eugene, you're coming back with us, I think he would have gone very willingly with them.
Maybe, maybe not. I think there were some interesting points that were made, and I think Eugene kind of drove this point home. There's some kind of connective narrative threads, not as overt as last week when we're talking about the, like everybody who's talking about losing a child and how that impacted them and how they came back from it. But this episode, I thought one of the interesting points that was being made was that most of the people that are in the groups that they're in are in those groups because they don't really have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And Eugene talks about why he has decided to be part of the Saviors. And it's because when he showed up there on the first day, he thought that he was going to be tortured and killed, or at least like thrown in to a jail cell and made to eat dog food. And when he wasn't, when he was valued and his contributions were appreciated and he was kind of given the red carpet treatment, he decided that this was the best way for him to make his way forward. And I think it was also floated to us at the beginning of the episode that all of the people at the Savior compound, I think Carl even mentions this in one of his letters, that they're all just making their way and trying to survive the best they know how. And you really, in this universe, you don't have a choice of where you end up. Like, you can't just decide like, oh, wow, this guy with the bat is kind of a jerk and he burns people's faces with irons and kills people for no reason. I'd like to go live at this place where they were collecting taxes the other day. Like, maybe I'll go live at the Hilltop. You can't just knock on the door and be like, yeah, I decided I don't want to live with Negan anymore. Hey, can I stay with you guys? That's not really how it works. Mm-hmm. So all of these people that are saviors, they didn't necessarily choose this life.
Yes. Okay. So that you feel like that they cannot open up the borders to people from the other colonies.
Right. That's just not the reality of this universe. And so there's less culpability. Like, they're just on the side they're on because that's the side that the Sorting Hat put them in. And they can't jump ship as easily. Like, we've seen how hard it is to jump ship. It didn't quite work out very well for Dwight now, did it?
No, it did not. So Eugene now, he has a plan, and it's pretty ingenious, that he ends up forcing himself to vomit on Rosita and then runs away.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't have his hands tied behind his back. Like, get him secure. Like, I know he's not going to overpower Rosita or, like, punch her in the face mm-hmm. or try anything like that because he's Eugene, but he's going to have something cooked up, and it's probably going to be something gross. So, you know, maybe just cut that off the knees.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jess, is the whole reason that we had the sardine macaroni and cheese, was this all sort of a setup as to that's why it was the especially disgusting for Eugene to throw up on Rosita?
Well, 100%. Like, this is not as gross if it's Pizza Friday, is it?
Why, it was like the smell of Eugene getting sick. That's what threw her off.
I guess. I'm surprised this didn't like go into like a full on Stand By Me blueberry pie situation.
That she should have started throwing. And then Daryl, oh my God, what's going on? I'm gonna get sick too. Oh, yeah, do you see those people over there getting sick? That is disgusting. I'm gonna get sick. Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm telling you, like, this was a real missed opportunity. Like, if they're gonna pay some homage to some great cinematic classics, this was one they should have done.
Yeah. And then how about Eugene, that he ends up hiding? I mean, what is he, like Bugs Bunny? Like, how did he think to do this and like cover himself like in a big dirt pile?
I think he saw the Hunger Games is mm-hmm. what happened. I think he's like, he's following PETA's lead and like camouflaging himself.
Yeah. So he ends up getting back, and then he's pretty haggard by the time he gets back to the sanctuary all in one day. Like, he should have been like, you guys are not going to believe the hell of the day that I just had.
No, I thought it was kind of an improvement on how he usually looks.
Yeah. He looked rugged.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of, he got a little bit of the essence of Daryl Dixon in him mm-hmm. with the bad hygiene, you know?
Yeah. And so he feels confident now that he's going to be able to fulfill the Negan bullet order. What's changed? Because earlier in the episode, and I know we said that nothing has changed from the beginning to the end, but he's really hesitant to say that they're even going to meet the bare minimum. And then at the end of the episode, he's been like captured the whole day. At the end of the episode, he's like, tell Negan we will absolutely meet his order.
Well, for one thing, at the beginning of the episode, it was Simon's order, not Negan's. Mm-hmm. And now it is Negan's order. So he's excited that Negan's back.
Yeah.
Because he and Negan are bros. He also, I think his confidence is bolstered by the fact that he evaded capture.
Mm-hmm.
And he's choosing his destiny.
Yes. So do you feel like that for Eugene, that he was sort of like dragging his feet at first, where he was sort of like a little hesitant, and now he is fully on board that he wants to kill all the people from Rick's group?
Yeah, I think the people from Rick's group didn't treat him very well tonight.
Yeah.
So there's that. It's like, he kind of understands now he can't ever go back to Rick's group.
Right.
So he's chosen his side and he's going to live with it. And it's at least, like, I think in the past there was kind of this idea that, you know, maybe if things don't work out with the saviors, he could go knocking on the door of the Hilltop and be like, hey guys, didn't work out with Negan. Can I move back in?
Yes. He also had the whole thing where he was like drinking and then he was like of two minds of it. But now I think he's all in on Negan.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Father Gabriel adventure, he was really towing that line. And then now he realized if he went back there, they'd just throw him in a pit and not give him any ice cream. So he's chosen his side and he's like, I have to win this because if I can't go back to the other side, if we don't win it.
Yes. Now, Jess, would you say we have been pretty positive overall so far through talking about most of this episode?
Yeah. I mean, apart from feeling like the entire Eugene story could have been cut out of the episode.
Yes, but it was, I wasn't expecting him to make himself throw up on Rosita. So at least that was novel.
Yeah, that was novel. And I think we did just kind of get into how it signals a character evolution and a realization on Eugene's part. And I guess I don't hate it quite as much as I did going in.
Okay. All right. Well, now let's talk about Aaron going to Oceanside.
Do we have to?
Why that? So Aaron is like left for dead and Aaron, like, I don't even understand what Aaron is doing and why he is basically giving up his life just to tell the ladies from Oceanside, who don't even have guns, right, that they need to join the fight against Negan.
Yeah, this was the entire storyline. You can sum it up in about 10 seconds. It's like, oh, Aaron's hanging out outside the gate to Oceanside. Oh, he didn't bring any food. He looks kind of tired. Huh, should we do anything about that? Nope, just leave him there.
Yeah. No, it was so silly that in the first time we see him, we see the ladies of Oceanside walking around. Here comes a walker. And then Aaron comes out and then he is able to put the dagger into the back of the head of the walker. And then he just like falls down to the ground that he's so famished and that he's just, but he's going to still like, is he just proving himself to those women that they should have said, look, we got this guy.
Well, I feel like he's trying to mansplain some things to them that they already understand. It's
like,
yeah,
there's like eight of us. We could take on this one walker. Okay. Why don't you go back and then take a nap, Aaron?
He's lying in the dirt like, but I just saved you. Yes. You would have been dead without me.
But you don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very much, it feels like Aaron thinks he's got some information that they don't already have.
Yes. You know, he tells them then later on. First of all, I don't know why no walkers attack him when he's sleeping, that he's like sleeps in the rain and then starts like drinking the rainwater. Then the walkers come and attack him after he's awake and now drank the water. And then, you know, here come the women again. And he's like, there's one thing that you need to know, that they're going to hurt you unless you fight. And then he like dies again.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, they already kind of hurt us before. That was that thing. Oh, P.S. We didn't talk about this. The theory that Simon was the one responsible for what happened to Oceanside, confirmed.
Yes, there you go.
And that makes a lot more sense. And that is the kind of, I feel like some of the writers who were sleeping on the job for a lot of the first half of this. Yeah, they were definitely Aaroning their way through the season. And I felt like a lot of things came together this episode that really fit together. They dovetail so nicely, narratively speaking, that I was really, really kind of pumped about it.
Yeah.
And this was one of those things where it's like, yeah, of course that was Simon. And let's confirm that it was Simon. And that makes sense for his character. It makes sense for Negan. It solves a mystery of like, why would Negan do that? That doesn't sound like Negan, although it sounds kind of like Negan now. But anyway.
Yeah.
Everybody at Oceanside knows exactly what's going to happen and what's not going to happen. And Aaron gave them precisely no useful information, even though he's feeling like, I'm giving you nuggets of wisdom. Help me.
Right. I mean, Aaron's logic is insane also, because he is trying to tell them that, look, until you come and join us in the fight against Negan, Negan is just going to keep hurting you guys. And it's like, well, that's funny because Negan and the Saviors have left us alone ever since we came and invented Oceanside. It's been you and your effing friends that have come back here and harassed us repeatedly, then took all of our guns, then came back here and killed Natanya, and now you are harassing us and won't leave us alone like a stalker.
Yeah, I think that logic is unassailable.
Yeah, we should join the Saviors and help get rid of you guys because the Saviors aren't bothering us.
Yeah, and this is just another one of those things that happens, I think, both on this show and on Fear the Walking Dead, where the core group rolls up on another group that was doing just fine before they showed up, and then they just mess with everything and get people killed, and you're supposed to feel like, oh, they want to join you now?
Mm-hmm.
No, of course. The Oceanside is doing fine. Their lives are fine. They don't need any of your aggro, Aaron. Go away.
Yeah, go away, Aaron. All right. Just a couple other odds and ends from tonight, and then we'll talk about comic book stuff. I didn't mention this before, but I loved it when after Negan killed Simon that he stands up to the group and just says, "What an a-hole."
It's very Negan.
I was dying. I was that killed me. It was so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty great. I mean, I don't want Negan to win, but I do kind of like him.
Yes. If you were Dwight, would you have trusted Gregory with delivering the plans, it being your R2-D2 of getting the stolen plans to the rebels?
No. No, nobody should trust Gregory to do anything. They should, every time Gregory shows up, they should kill him.
He's got the juice. So much juice, though.
Yeah, it's not the juice you want. It's like vegetable juice. Like, just kill him and get it over with. He's not going to help anybody. Nobody knows what side he's on. He's not, like, he's a worse turncoat than Dwight, because at least Dwight, you kind of suspect he's still Team Daryl, but... Yeah, Gregory, who even knows? Like, Gregory's going to do what's best for Gregory, and that's not necessarily giving the plans to Rick.
Right. And now Dwight has delivered this plan, which is going to be an ambush for everybody at the Hilltop. And boy, Daryl and Tara are going to have a lot more points to sort through in their debate of, is Dwight with us or is Dwight against us?
Of course, that is assuming Rick doesn't look at these plans and be like, "Hey, Gregory, did you just like steal a map and write a bunch of stuff on it just so we'd let you back in?"
Right. Hopefully they say that if this is from Gregory, then it can't possibly be right. I mean, to me, the map just looked like this is just a bunch of circles.
Yeah, it looked like really arbitrary circles. They didn't follow any kind of map logic.
Yes. So what were those circles supposed to be? That was where Negan's outposts were going to be?
Yeah, they seemed like they were really, really close together. I mean, I don't know how big that map is.
Yeah.
Like, if it's a map of the whole United States, then maybe okay. But if it's a map of, like, Virginia, these are, like, 5 miles apart.
Yeah. And speaking of really close together, I also just want to say that Negan is a bit of a close talker.
Yeah, I hope he wasn't eating any of the sardines and garlic mac and cheese.
Yeah, he really like gets in people's like personal space where he's like whispering in your ear when he's like talking to you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's been his MO for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just what else from this week's show?
I think we've hit all of the major points. Mm-hmm. I feel really bad, like, whoever writes for this show must really hate the actress that plays Rosita, because every plan they give her is completely worthless and
it never
falls
works
through spectacularly. And I feel really bad for Rosita that she has to keep failing all the time. And I'd kind of like her to have a win just because she's supposed to be a good guy.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's also, I think I'm less than impressed at Rick's beard grooming habits. Like, he's really starting to rock that mm-hmm. old man Rick look that's in Carltopia.
Yes. Yes. So, but you're not impressed with it.
Yeah, I'm not impressed with it. I think it adds years to his life. Andrew Lincoln is a handsome man.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick Grimes could be a handsome man, too, if he just, like, trim his facial hair every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just as we look ahead to next Sunday, okay, you just sort of, like, give me the outline of how next Sunday we know that we have to come to at least some kind of a resolution, right? You know, we have the whole bleary-eyed Rick stuff going on. We have to get Morgan to fear the Walking Dead. So what do you think the next hour of Walking Dead looks like?
Well, we're only getting 1 hour, correct? Because we get the second hour.
I believe it's 1 hour of the Walking Dead, and then we start Fear the Walking Dead. I mean, that these last couple of episodes have all been an hour and 15 minutes. I believe it should be just 60 minutes.
So that's really not a lot of time. Like, we even got 75 minutes this week.
Yeah. No, unless they're, like, starting in an hour early, which I don't think they would do. I think we're going right from Walking Dead to Fear the Walking Dead, and maybe it'll be like 105 or something like that, and then we go right to Fear the Walking Dead and then right to Talking Dead.
Yeah, that's, and Talking Dead's going to be kind of a letdown too, because you, when you have to put it off for an hour, I feel like,
no, it's going to have both casts. It's going to be the meeting of the two shows.
What, so he has to wait an hour to talk about it, and he has to shoehorn Fear the Walking Dead talk into it, and he has to interview 24 people.
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to be a hot mess.
Yes, yes. Well, the shows are combined, and I feel like that once we combined the, like, we had a point where we said, should we make a Fear the Walking Dead podcast feed? Said, no, put it all in one feed. We were way ahead of AMC on this.
Yeah, that's very true. Of course, you know, this whole idea of people sitting down and talking about something in real time after the show, I feel like we invented that too.
I don't know about that. So, I mean, what happens next week that Morgan ends up leaving the show? I mean, we have Jadis out there. We have so many different storylines to potentially tie up.
Yeah, I think we're going to get very short shrift on Morgan, and I think they're going to rely on him explaining things in Fear the Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're hoping they can kind of get away with some sloppy storytelling where he just kind of runs off into the sunset, and then Fear the Walking Dead opens on him, like, running into the frame and saying, oh, hey, you know what I just did? All this stuff, blah, blah, blah. There was a war and I felt bad. And I'm ripping my psyche open to someone I just met because that's how I do things now. That would be my guess. Like, I think they're relying on Fear the Walking Dead to fill in those gaps. I think maybe we could get away with not seeing any Jadis at all.
You think so?
I think so. Or minimal Jadis. I think she could be going off somewhere to show up in another season. Like, we might be done with Jadis for a while.
Yeah.
But then we've got, like, all the Kingdom people, and we've got all the Hilltop people, and we've got to tie up this war where I feel like they might need a whole hour of just Rick and Negan to tie up that war.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be very curious to see how they do tie everything up in 60 minutes, but I feel like they really have to because they've drawn this stuff out way too long.
So it sounds like you're saying that what you are expecting is a little bit of Morgan to sort of, like, fill the gaps of what ends up happening here on Walking Dead when he gets to Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, I mean, he could.
Morgan, tell us the story. So what happened with that guy, Rick and Negan, you were talking about? Well, and he'll just, like, go into it.
What if the whole first episode of Fear the Walking Dead is like that episode of Star Trek, the original series, where they piece together, like, the archive footage from the original pilot and tell this story of Captain Pike?
The menagerie?
Yes. Like, this is going to be the season premiere of Fear the Walking Dead is just Morgan telling everybody what happened at the end of Walking Dead Prime.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That'd be pretty amazing. Okay. All right. So we're going to leave it here for the episode prime, and we are going to then get into things from the spoilers. Send in your feedback questions, of course. Josh and I will be then recording our feedback show. Jess, what do you have a vote on Fear the Walking Dead?
Fear the Walking Dead. Yes. I just wish I was going to be part of this because it sounds amazing and epic.
Okay, well, look, that if you want to figure out a way to be a part of it, then we could talk logistics off air.
I'm about to start a new day job. I can't be day drinking, so sadly, no.
Okay. All right. So that being said, we are going to get into everything from the comic books after tonight's episode of The Walking Dead right now.
Comic Book Zone. Tune out now if spoilers aren't what you want to know. Avoid hearing plot points about Rick or Michonne. Now's the last chance to turn off during the intro. Comic Book Zone.
Yes, okay. Thank you, Colin Latchford, for that. Okay, Jess, so we know a lot of stuff going on in this episode. How much of this was borrowed from the comic books?
Really not very much at all.
Okay. Like we know that Dwight is significant in the comics in terms of this battle with Negan. So is there anything that mirrors where Dwight is found out to have been a turncoat?
No, it seems like Negan doesn't really find this out until it's too late. I think Dwight gets away with everything without Negan really cottoning onto it throughout the comic series. And it's tied up a lot more neatly. So this is, again, points to how are they going to wrap this all up in 60 minutes? Because I cannot deal with a whole other season of Negan war. I feel like they really have to. But this is really – there's all of the elements that – tie it up in the comics are things we've already seen on the show. Namely Dwight shooting somebody with a
Dwight Schruting.
Yes. Dwight Schruting. he doesn't muck his weapons up. He shoots somebody. And in the comics, he shoots somebody, shoots Rick. Negan assumes that that means Rick is dead. And then Rick turns out to not be dead. And Negan is shocked. And then Rick gets the upper hand on Negan and locks him in the basement for 3 years.
But is this still a thing that is in the Savior's arsenal, or do we sort of drop this plot line like a hot potato about the Saviors have weapons that are covered in zombie guts?
They kind of drop it in the comics, too. Like, as soon as the Negan War thing wraps up, nobody ever does it again.
Yeah. Well, there was a Geneva Treaty, I think.
I feel like they should have at least like pointed out, like, here's a reason why these people are the only people that ever did it. It went really badly for a couple of people. So, yeah, that's a bad idea. Don't do that. And they never do it again. It's never really explained why the Saviors were the only people to ever do it, even though it was super effective in one battle.
Yeah. Okay. It's like the Picard maneuver.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly like that.
Yeah.
Boy, we're really Star Trek heavy tonight.
Yeah. Look, sometimes something works really great once, and then it's like, okay, well, we don't want to just keep doing it, you know, all the time.
I guess, but you would think that you learn, there are certain things you learn about the rules of this universe that become very useful for the whole rest of the series. Like, for instance, covering yourself in walker guts lets you walk among the walkers.
Mm-hmm.
That's super effective. Everybody does it. And it only really went wrong for one person. And I think it's debatable that that's the thing that went wrong for him.
Mm-hmm.
The walkers are drawn to bright lights and loud noises. I feel like they don't use that enough, but it's something that they take advantage of from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole, like, muck your weapon up with walker guts and then you can just scratch somebody and they die. I feel like you never see that again. And you really should.
Just talk about Eugene and what's going on with him now. Does Eugene, he defects away to the Saviors, or is captured and is part of the Saviors in the comic books, or is this a TV invention?
Eugene is taken more forcefully by the Saviors and never fully integrates with them the way that he has on the show.
Mm-hmm.
His heart is always with his group, and he does end up fully betraying the Saviors when the right time rolls around. And so then he's welcomed back into the fold after the war with open arms. And in fact, the story arc that's going on right now, he's one of the major driving forces of it. So that will be interesting to see what pieces of that they can incorporate into the show, if any, because I'm pretty sure you can't make him as sympathetic a character anymore.
Yeah. And so we'll see if he's able to flip back, if we're able to see Negan end up somehow having a truce or some sort of a stalemate, and what the future holds for Eugene. What about Father Gabriel?
Father Gabriel, I think, has been dead for a while in the comics at this point.
Is that why they're so good?
Yeah, sure.
That's why people like them so much.
I hadn't really thought about that, but you know, there's a lot of characters in the comics that are pretty useless in the comics that turn out to be pretty cool on the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's back and forth. Like, the comics have a lot of issues, and
a lot of issues there have been a number of volumes.
Yes, they have more than 150 issues.
Okay.
But there's a lot in the comics that you could find to complain about, probably as much as you could about the show. Or maybe I just like to complain. Get at me in the comments.
Yes. Okay. Anything else, Jess?
I don't think so. Like, this was kind of this went off in a direction that was really very extra if we're trying to bring things around to where they are in the comics. Maybe we are going to get a whole other season of Rick and Negan butting heads, and I hope not, because that would be intolerable. But they had a way to wrap it up neatly, which was the neater way that the comics wrapped it up. And now I don't think that's the direction they're going to go. So your guess is as good as mine next week. I don't think the comics give us any clues about that, except for I think the comics do point to where Negan ends up as a result of all of this.
Okay. All right, Jess. So great job once again. Okay. So next Sunday night, we got a lot going on. We've got the, of course, Walking Dead season 8 finale. We have the Fear the Walking Dead premiere. We have Talking Dead happening as well. So what we're going to try to do is that Jess and I will have our recap of the season 8 finale of The Walking Dead. We'll record that next Sunday night. Then next Monday night, we will record our recap of Fear the Walking Dead. And then we can, if necessary, if anything comes to light from the Talking Dead or anything like that, we can sort of double back and talk about the Walking Dead as well, and sort of like have that context of everything going on with Morgan. Does that sound like a plan?
That's a lot of podcasting, but I'm here for it.
It's only two episodes.
Yeah, that's 100% more episodes than I do in a typical week.
I do believe that we can meet up with the expectations of the multiple podcasts, as Negan has instructed us to, as if we can meet our deadline. And I do believe that we can hit the quota.
Without barfing.
Yeah, the listeners might. No, that's going to be in Beer the Walking Dead.
Yeah, that's true. This is, I cannot wait for Beer the Walking Dead. As a listener, I'm going to enjoy that very much.
Okay, well, we have to talk about the logistics, Josh and I, about how to pull that off. Have you listened to our feedback show from this week? All right, Jess, do we have a hashtag for tonight?
I think Go Away Aaron is a pretty good hashtag.
Better than Aaron mansplaining.
Yeah, I think Go Away Aaron is more popular.
All right. Go away, Aaron. And then, of course, feedback show coming up midweek. Follow Jessica Lease on Twitter. She's at Haymaker Hattie. Josh and I will have our latest rewatch of Game of Thrones season 3, episode 6, The Climb. That's all there is, Jess.
That's all there is.
The climb is all there is. This is all there is. Thank you guys so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.